Chapter 28. But there is no doubt this Shion Kuthra fellow had a warmer and more faithful heart hid within him than many a dandy who is as handsome as Apollo. I, for my part, never can understand why a man falls in love, and heartily give him credit for so doing, never mind with what or whom. That I take to be a point quite as much beyond an individual's own control as the catching of the smallpox, or the color of his hair. To the surprise of all, Assistant Surgeon Dionysius Hagarty was deeply and seriously in love, and I am told that one day he very nearly killed the before-mentioned young ensign with a carving knife, for venturing to make a second caricature, representing Lady Gammon and Jemima in a fantastical park, surrounded by three gardeners, three carriages, three footmen, and the covered sire. He would have no joking concerning them. He became moody and quarrelsome of habit. He was for some time much more in the surgery and hospital than in the mess. He gave up the eating, for the most part, of those vast quantities of beef and pudding, for which his stomach used to afford such ample and swift accommodation. And when the cloth was drawn, instead of taking 12 tumblers, and singing Irish melodies, as he used to do, in a horrible cracked yelling voice, he would retire to his own apartment, or gloomily pace the barrack yard, or madly whip and spur a grey mare he had on the road to Leamington, where his Jemima, although invisible for him, still dwelt. The season at Leamington coming to a conclusion by the withdrawal of the young fellows who frequented that watering place, the widow Gam retired to her usual quarters for the other months of the year. Where these quarters were, I think we have no right to ask, for I believe as he had quarreled with her brother at Molloyville, and besides, was a great deal too proud to be a burden on anybody. Not only did the widow quit Leamington, but very soon afterwards the 120th received its marching orders, and left Wheaton and Warwickshire. Hagarty's appetite was by this time partially restored, but his love was not altered, and his humor was still morose and gloomy. I am informed that at this period of his life he wrote some poems relative to his unhappy passion, a wild set of verses of several lengths, and in his handwriting, being discovered upon a sheet of paper in which a pitch plaster was wrapped up, which Lieutenant and Adjutant Weezer was compelled to put on for a cold. Fancy then, 3 years afterwards, the surprise of all Hagarty's acquaintances on reading in the public papers the following announcement. Married, at Monkstown on the 12th instant, Dionysius Hagarty Esquire, of age, M120th foot, to Jemima Amelia Wilhelmina Molloy, daughter of the late Major Lancelot Gam, R. M.M., and granddaughter of the late, and niece of the present Burke Bodkin Blake Molloy Esquire, comma Molloyville, County Mayo. Has the course of true love at last begun to run smooth? Thought I, as I laid down the paper, and the old times, and the old leering bragging widow, and the high shoulders of her daughter, and the jolly days with the 120th, and Dr. Jeffson's one-horse chaise, and the Warwickshire hunt, and Aunt Louise's, but never mind her, came back to my mind. Has that good-natured simple fellow at last met with his reward? Well, if he has not to marry the mother-in-law too, he may get on well enough. Another year announced the retirement of Assistant Surgeon Hagarty from the 120th, where he was replaced by Assistant Surgeon Angus Rothsay Leach, a Scotchman, probably, with whom I have not the least acquaintance, and who has nothing whatever to do with this little history. Still more years passed on, during which time I will not say that I kept a constant watch upon the fortunes of Mr. Hagarty and his lady. For, perhaps, if the truth were known, I never thought for a moment about them, until one day, being at Kingstown, near Dublin, dawdling on the beach, and staring at the Hill of Howth, as most people at that watering place do, I saw coming towards me a tall gaunt man, with a pair of bushy red whiskers, of which I thought I had seen the like in former years, and a face which could be no other than Hagarty's. It was Hagarty, 10 years older than when we last met, and greatly more grim and thin. He had on one shoulder a young gentleman in a dirty tartan costume, and a face exceedingly like his own peeping from under a battered plume of black feathers, while with his other hand he was dragging a light green go-cart, in which reposed a female infant of some 2 years old. Both were roaring with great power of lungs. As soon as Dennis saw me, his face lost the dull, puzzled expression which had seemed to characterize it. He dropped the pole of the go-cart from one hand, and his son from the other, and came jumping forward, to greet me with all his might, leaving his progeny roaring in the road. "Bless my soul," says he, "sure it's Fitzboodle? Fitz, don't you remember me? Dennis Haggarty of the 120th? Leamington, you know? Molloy, my boy, hold your tongue, and stop your screeching, and Jemima's too. Do you hear? Well, it does good to sore eyes to see an old face. How fat you're grown, Fitz. And were ye ever in Ireland before? And aren't ye delighted with it? Confess, now, isn't it beautiful?" This question regarding the merits of their country, which I have remarked is put by most Irish persons, being answered in a satisfactory manner, and the shouts of the infants appeased from an apple stall hard by, Dennis and I talked of old times. I congratulated him on his marriage with the lovely girl whom we all admired, and hoped he had a fortune with her, and so forth. His appearance, however, did not bespeak a great fortune. He had an old gray hat, short old trousers, an old waistcoat with regimental buttons, and patched lecher boots, such as are not usually sported by persons in easy life. "Ah," says he, with a sigh, in reply to my queries, "times are changed since them days, Fitzboodle. My wife's not what she was, the beautiful creature you knew her. Molloy, my boy, run off in a hurry to your mama, and tell her an English gentleman is coming home to dine, for you'll dine with me, Fitz, in course." And I agreed to partake of that meal, though Master Molloy altogether declined to obey his papa's orders with respect to announcing the stranger. "Well, I must announce you myself," said Haggarty, with a smile. "Come, it's just dinner time, and my little cottage is not 100 yards off." Accordingly, we all marched in procession to Dennis's little cottage, which was one of a row, and a half of one-storied houses, with little courtyards before them, and mostly with very fine names on the doorposts of each. Urgent Haggarty was emblazoned on Dennis's gate, on a stained green copper plate, and, not content with this, on the doorpost above the bell, was an oval with the inscription of U. Molloyville. The bell was broken, of course. The court, or garden path, was moldy, weedy, seedy. There were some dirty rocks, by way of ornament, round a faded glass plat in the center, some clothes and rags hanging out of most part of the windows of New Molloyville, the immediate entrance to which was by a battered scraper, under a broken trellis work, up which a withered creeper declined any longer to climb. "Small, but snug," says Haggarty. "L.L. lead the way, Fitz. Put your hat on the flower pot there, and turn to the left into the drawing room." A fog of onions and turf smoke filled the whole of the house, and gave signs that dinner was not far off. Far off? You could hear it frizzling in the kitchen, where the maid was also endeavoring to hush the crying of a third refractory child. But as we entered, all three of Haggarty's darlings were in full roar. "Is it you, Dennis?" cried a sharp raw voice, from a dark corner in the drawing room to which we were introduced, and in which a dirty tablecloth was laid for dinner, some bottles of porter and a cold mutton bone being laid out on a rickety grand piano hard by. "Ere all was late, Mr. Haggarty. Have you brought the whiskey from Nowlands? I'll go bail ye of not now. My dear, I've brought an old friend of yours, and mine to take potluck with us today," said Dennis. "When is he to come?" said the lady. At which speech I was rather surprised, for I stood before her. "Here he is, Jemima my love," answered Dennis, looking at me. "Mr. Fitzboodle. Don't you remember him in Warwickshire, darling?" "Mr. Fitzboodle. I am very glad to see him," said the lady, rising, and curtsying with much cordiality. Mrs. Haggarty was blind. Mrs. Hegarty was not only blind, but it was evident that smallpox had been the cause of her loss of vision. Her eyes were bound with a bandage, her features were entirely swollen, scarred and distorted by the horrible effects of the malady. S.E. had been knitting in a corner when we entered, and was wrapped in a very dirty bedgown. Her voice to me was quite different to that in which she addressed her husband. She spoke to Hegarty in broad Irish. She addressed me in that most odious of all languages, Irish English, endeavoring to the utmost to disguise her brogue, and to speak with a true dawdling distinct English air. "Are you long in Ireland?" said the poor creature in this accent. "You must find it a sad babbious place, Mr. Fitzpoodle, I'm sure. It was very kind of you to come upon us en famille and accept a dinner sans ceremony. Mr. Hegarty, I hope you will put the wine into ace. Mr. Fitzpoodle must be melted with this hot weath." For some time she conducted the conversation in this polite strain, and I was obliged to say, in reply to a query of hers, that I did not find her the least altered, though I should never have recognized her, but for this rencontre. She told Hegarty with a significant air to get the wine from the cellar, and whispered to me that he was his own butler, and the poor fellow, taking the hint, scudded away into the town for a pound of beefsteak and a couple of bottles of wine from the tavern. "Will the children get their potatoes and butter here?" said a barefoot girl, with long black hair flowing over her face, which she thrust in at the door. "Let them sup in the nursery, Elizabeth, and send Edwards to me." "Is it cook you mean, ma'am?" said the girl. "Send her at once," shrieked the unfortunate woman, and the noise of frying presently ceasing, a hot woman made her appearance, wiping her brows with her apron, and asking, with an accent decidedly Hibernian, what the mistress wanted. "Lead me up to my dressing room, Edwards. I really am not fit to be seen in this dishabille by Mr. Fitzpoodle." "Fate I can't," says Edwards. "Sure the master's at the butcher's, and can't look to the kitchen fire." "Nonsense, I must go," cried Mrs. Hegarty, and Edwards, putting on a resigned air, and giving her arm and face a further rub with her apron, held out her arm to Mrs. Dennis, and the pair went upstairs. She left me to indulge my reflections for half an hour, at the end of which period she came downstairs dressed in an old yellow satin, with the poor shoulders exposed just as much as ever. As he had mounted a tawdry cap, which Hegarty himself must have selected for her. As he had all sorts of necklaces, bracelets, and earrings in gold, in garnets, in mother-of-pearl, in ormolu. She brought in a furious savor of musk, which drove the odors of onions and turf smoke before it, and she waved across her wretched angular mean scarred features an old cambric handkerchief with a yellow lace border. "And so you would have known me anywhere, Mr. Fitzpoodle?" said she, with a grin that was meant to be most fascinating. "Was sure you would. For though my dreadful illness deprived me of my sight, it is a mercy that it did not change my features or complexion at all." This mortification had been spared the unhappy woman, but I don't know whether, with all her vanity, her infernal pride, folly, and selfishness, it was charitable to leave her in her error. Yet why correct her? There is a quality in certain people which is above all advice, exposure, or correction. Only let a man or woman have dullness sufficient, and they need bow to no extant authority. A dullard recognizes no betters. A dullard can't see that he is in the wrong. A dullard has no scruples of conscience, no doubts of pleasing, or succeeding, or doing right, no qualms for other people's feelings, no respect but for the fool himself. How can you make a fool perceive he is a fool? Such a personage can no more see his own folly than he can see his own ears. And the great quality of dullness is to be unalterably contented with itself. What myriads of souls are there of this admirable sort, selfish, stingy, ignorant, passionate, brutal, bad sons, mothers, fathers, never known to do kind actions? to pause, however, in this disquisition, which was carrying us far off Kingstown, New Malloyville, Ireland, nay, into the wide world, wherever dullness inhabits. Let it be stated that Mrs. Haggarty, from my brief acquaintance with her and her mother, was of the order of persons just mentioned. There was an air of conscious merit about her, very hard to swallow, along with the infamous dinner poor Dennis managed, after much delay, to get on the table. She did not fail to invite me to Malloyville, where she said her cousin would be charmed to see me, and she told me almost as many anecdotes about that place as her mother used to impart in former days. I observed, moreover, that Dennis cut her the favorite pieces of the beefsteak, that she ate thereof with great gusto, and that she drank with similar eagerness of the various strong liquors at table. "Ye Irish ladies are all fond of a little glass of punch," she said, with a playful air, and Dennis mixed her a powerful tumbler of such violent grog as I myself could swallow only with some difficulty. She talked of her suffering a great deal, of her sacrifices, of the luxuries to which she had been accustomed before marriage, in a word, of a hundred of those themes on which some ladies are in the custom of enlarging when they wish to plague some husbands. But honest Dennis, far from being angry at this perpetual, wearisome, impudent recurrence to her own superiority, rather encouraged the conversation than otherwise. It pleased him to hear his wife discourse about her merits and family splendors. He was so thoroughly beaten down and henpecked, that he, as it were, gloried in his servitude, and fancied that his wife's magnificence reflected credit on himself. He looked towards me, who was half sick of the woman and her egotism, as if expecting me to exhibit the deepest sympathy, and flung me glances across the table as much as to say, "What a gifted creature my Jemima is, and what a fine fellow I am to be in possession of her." When the children came down, she scolded them, of course, and dismissed them abruptly, for which circumstance, perhaps, the writer of these pages was not in his heart very sorry, and, after having sat a preposterously long time, left us, asking whether we would have coffee there or in her boudoir. "Oh, here, of course," said Dennis, with rather a troubled air, and in about 10 minutes the lovely creature was led back to us again by Edwards, and the coffee made its appearance. After coffee her husband begged her to let Mr. Fitzpoodle hear her voice. "He longs for some of his old favorites." "No. Do you?" said she, and was led in triumph to the jingling old piano, and with a screechy wiry voice, sang those very abominable old ditties which I had heard her sing at Leamington 10 years back. Haggarty, as she sang, flung himself back in the chair delighted. Husbands always are, and with the same song, one that they have heard when they were 19 years old probably. Most Englishmen's tunes have that date, and it is rather affecting, I think, to hear an old gentleman of 60 or 70 quavering the old ditty that was fresh when he was fresh, and in his prime. If he has a musical wife, depend on it, he thinks her old songs of 1788 are better than Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.